Okay, we're beginning here, five lines from the bottom of Kuf Lamed Hey Amud Bet. We're just going to chaz over quickly what we finished with yesterday, because that's going to be the basis for most of what we're going to speak about in today's Gemara. And that is Tanya, the Braita that we brought with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Shisha Lamed Yom Ba'adam, Eino Nefel. Any baby that survives for 30 days, that is a viable entity when it comes to human beings. Shenemar. And the proof text is from Parshat Korach with regards to Pidyon HaBen, where it says, Uftuyav miben chodesh tifteh, that you redeem the child after 30 days. So you see here that the Torah waits 30 days before it makes you redeem the child, because it assumes that once you've hit that threshold of 30 days, the child is then viable. If it's a viable entity, then you need to be poded, the bechor, from the Kohen. And with regards to animals, it's Shmonat Yamim Behema. It's 8 days by an animal. Eino Nefel, once it crosses that threshold, it's no longer considered to be a non-viable entity. Shenemar, because it says with regards to Korbanot, Umyom HaShmini V'Hala Yiratzelu Korban. So that from the 8th day and onward, one can bring a animal as a Korban. The assumption being here, again, that the entity is not viable until that point in time. It would be inappropriate to bring such an animal on the Mizbeach. And so therefore it waits until that threshold has been crossed in order for you to bring that animal on the Mizbeach. But the assumption is here is that just like that's applicable by Korbanot, so too it is applicable by Chulin. You could see someone arguing on that basic point, which is saying that by a Korban, that is the requirement that you wait until that point in time. With regards to Chulin, there is no such requirement, and the difference might be nothing to do with viability, but rather that we want to bring the best items on the Mizbeach, and before the 8th day, it's not considered to be an appropriate animal to bring as a korban because of the pasuk in Malachi that says, "V'chi tegishun iver lizboach ein ra, v'chi tegishu piseach v'chule ein ra." When you bring your garbage to the Mizbeach, or those things that are not the best of quality, that's not acceptable as a korban. And that might be the distinction of somebody who argues on this position, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which we'll see later in today's daf, whether there is such a position. The Baalei Tosafot also point out over here that there's a difference between the 30-day threshold and the 8-day threshold. As you see here, on the 8th day, already the animal is ra'ui l'mizbeach. It is not ra'ui for the first 7 days. This 8th day is already something that is ra'ui l'mizbeach. On the other hand, when it comes to the 30-day threshold, it's only on the 31st day that it is considered not to be a nefel any longer. For the first 30 days, it's considered like less than 30 days. Only after you've crossed over the 30-day threshold and gone to the 31st day is it considered to be a viable entity. So with regards to the 8 days, that's already a viable entity on the 8th day, whereas regards to the 30 days, it's not a viable entity by human beings until it reaches the 31st day. So now the Gemara continues, Halo Shaha, if it did not make it to that threshold time, Sveika Havo, then it's going to be a Sofek as to whether this was a viable entity or not. Mimhel Heichem Halinan Le. How do we give a Brit Milah to such an individual? We don't know if it's really a viable entity. If it's not a viable entity, then they're not required to have a Brit Milah. If they're not required to have a Brit Milah, how we doche Shabbat, how we over the Isurim of Chabura on Shabbat in order to give a Brit Milah to this baby. Now, as Tosfot points out over here, that statement of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel has to be made in general. It's not just by a baby that's born after 8 months where we don't classify it as a viable entity unless it meets this threshold. It is a safek that applies to all babies that are born unless we know otherwise that they have reached their full gestation period. And therefore, the question arises in any such situation when you have a stam baby and we don't know whether it is kalulo chadashav, it's reached full gestation and therefore is a viable entity, then this qualification that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel makes is in place, and therefore, how can we, in any situation like that, have milah bidocha Shabbat when we don't know for sure if this baby is a viable entity? So, Amar Rav Ada Bava, malin oto mimanavshach. Well, you can give him a brit milah either way. Im chayhu, if it is a viable entity, shapir kamayu, then this is his 8th day, and it's appropriate to do a brit milah on Shabbat or on Yom Tov because Milah is Docha Shabbat, Milah is Docha Yom Tov, as we've seen in the Dapim prior to this. Vim Lav, if it's not a viable entity, Mechatech Bebasarhu, then you're just cutting flesh, meaning that there is no problem of Chabura. Chabura is a problem when you're dealing with a live entity. The problem of Shchita, the problem of Chabura, as we've discussed earlier in the Masechta, is a problem as a derivative of Shchita, But there the Gemara discussed the possibility of whether it's a problem mishum toveya or mishum netilat nishama. And in the end, we lean towards this saying that it's a problem of netilat nishama and chabura. And therefore, it's only relevant to an entity that is a viable or living entity. So a living entity has this problem of chabura, whereas a quote-unquote dead entity, an entity that is not viable, which is classified as halakhically being not alive, then cutting such an item is like cutting a piece of meat, and therefore has no restriction on Shabbat. So mimon of shach, you can give the milah. If you're violating the din, that means it's a viable entity, and it does require brit milah, and it's doche Shabbat. If the entity is not a viable entity, then you're not doing anything wrong on Shabbat, so there's no problem. Even though it doesn't need a brit milah, not doing anything that is improper in terms of violating the Shabbat. So now the Gemara asks, given that statement of Rav Abba, Velahad Tanya, what do we do with this braita? Safek ben Zayin, Safek ben Chet. We have a child that was born, we're not sure if it went to 7 months of gestation or 8 months of gestation. Ein mechalalin et la veta Shabbat. You're not allowed to violate Shabbat. Amai, nimhalei mimonov shach. According to Rav Abba's logic, in that situation, we should mimonov shach give the baby a brit milah. We should give him a brit milah either way. Imchai hu shapir kamayu. If he's a live, viable entity because kalulu chadashav and he reached the 7 month gestation, then he is a good brit milah and zdocha Shabbat. Bimlav, if it's an 8 month baby, then it's like an even, or it's like a non-viable entity or non-living entity. Halachically, then mechatech v'basaru, it's cutting basar, and that's not a problem on Shabbat. So Amar Mar Breid Ravina, Anav Rav Nechumi Bar Zecharia Targimna. We explained this brayta in order to reconcile it with the position of Rav Abba Bava. Mimhil hachi na mimahilinle. The brayta is not saying that you don't give a brit milah. It says you do give a brit milah. It says that misafek we don't give a brit milah. It's lo nitzrocha el machshire milah. It's coming to tell you that you can't violate Shabbat for machshire milah. Baliba de Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, we saw the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva at the beginning of the parak. Rabbi Eliezer believes that machshire milah are docha et haShabbat. That means you can make a knife. You can fire up the coals in order to make a knife. You could do all sorts of preparations in order to facilitate the ability to do a brit milah on Shabbat. And you're allowed to do that even in violation of Shabbat because machshire milah are mutarim on Shabbat. And Rabbi Kiva says only things that you can't do before Shabbat are allowed to violate the Shabbat. And machshirei milah, since they all could have been done or prepared before Shabbat, they're not docheh et haShabbat. So according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no question, you give the brit milah based on Rav Abba Ava's logic. According to Rabbi Eliezer, here you have a problem, because Ein Hachanami, when it comes to giving the brit milah, he'll agree that mimon of shach, you give the brit milah. On the other hand, when it comes to machshirei milah, over there you can't say that making the knife or the coals is okay to cut basar. Because the only reason they machshirim are allowed to make a knife or to make those coals is because you're doing something that's preparatory for a mitzvah. That assumes that there is a mitzvah being done over here. When you have a safek ben zayin, safek ben chet, we're not sure you're doing a mitzvah of milah. And since there's a safek in the mitzvah of milah, you can't allow the machshirim milah to be docha Shabbat. So Enoch Hanami, the breita, thinks that you can give a brit milah, but based on Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that machshirim milah are mutarim, the Brayta is saying that you can't aim mechalalim at the Shabbat for machshirei milah according to Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Abaye Kitanae. That statement of Rav Adra Abba is a machloket Tanaim. That's the way Rashi reads it. That's the way the Rova of the Rishonim read it. That the machloket Tanaim that we're about to express over here is whether a baby that's born, you can give it a brit mi manof shach, because either it is a good milah or it's basar. The Rashba brings one possibility that this Kitanae is referencing back to the bright of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel to say that the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is a machloket tanaim, but we'll read it like Rashi and the Rova Rishonim that it's a reference to Rav Abba Ava, and that is v'chi amut min ha-beima asher yilechem lochla. If one of the animals that is for you to eat, I mean it's a kosher animal that dies, which makes it into a nivela, lahavi ben shmona, to tell you that an animal that only reached 8 months of gestation, she'ein shchichtato mitaharato. The shchita does not take away the din of nevela. An animal that dies is classified halachically as a nevela. That's whether it's a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal. If it dies of natural causes, of sickness, of anything besides shchita, then that animal is classified as a nevela. On the other hand, if you shecht an animal, it only applies to a kosher animal where shechita is relevant, and there was a problem that you find out it's a treifa, you find out there was some problem after the shechita is successful at removing the tumat nevela from the animal. So in this instance where you did shechita, that should have removed the tumah from the animal. What the pasuk says is v'chi yamut min beima asher hi lachem lochla. So it says there mina beima. Some of those animals that you eat and die will classify as nevela, and some of them will not be classified as a nevela. The differentiating factor is whether they had shechita done to them or didn't have shechita done to them. Now, the machloket in the Braita is Rabbi ben Shmona. This was an animal where we assume that the behemah gasa has the same gestation as human beings, 9 months, and it was born ben Shmona. It was born in the 8th month. She ain't shechitato mitarato. The shechita is not successful at removing the tumat nevela because the animal is not considered to be a viable entity whereby shechita is valuable or is efficacious in removing the tumah. Because the animal is as if it's born dead. It's dead before you shechted it because it wasn't a viable entity. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon omrim, shechitato mitaharato. The shechita is successful at removing the tumat nevela. My love, bahaka miflige. What is the fundamental machloket, or what is the point of conflict or contention between these tanaim? The mar savar, chayhu. The latter two tanaim who say that the shechita works, classified as a living entity. Umasavar metu, and the others consider it or classify it as being a mate. So again, it could be like the Rashba says, this is a machloket that references back to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel to say that there are certain animals that have to cross a threshold before they're considered to be a viable entity or a non-viable entity. We have this classification of animals not being viable entities, even though they've been born and they are living right now. Or, like Rashi suggests over here, that this is a reference to Rav Adarbava's statement that you have animals that are born, that are alive, that have a classification of mate. Similarly, a baby, if it's a nafel, which is that it's not a viable entity, it's classified as mate, and therefore cutting it on Shabbat is not classified as a chabura. This does have ramifications with regards to what you think the problem of chabura is. Again, Rashi, Tosafot, we saw back in Shmona Shratzim, discuss whether it's Soveya, whether it's Netilat Neshama, and Tosafot favors heavily saying that it's Netilat Neshama, and it seems that Rashi is leaning in that direction as well. According to the Rambam, who says that the problem with Chabura is Mifareik, it's very hard to understand this Gemara over here, because Mifareik applies to items that are alive, or items that are not classified as alive, and therefore it's very difficult to understand the Rambam Shita in the context of this Gemara. The Prima Godin raises this in his introduction to Hilchot Shabbat in questioning that view of the Rambam. So this is a bias suggestion that it is a machloket tanaim, and Rava responds to him, Amar Rava, Yehochi. If you think that that's their point of contention, why are they arguing about tuma, defilement, and tara, purity, meaning the question of whether it's classified as a nevela or not, is it kosher to eat? Meaning that same fundamental question will exist here. If the animal is alive and you shecht it, then you should have shechita and you can eat the animal. If the animal is classified as dead and you do shechita and you're not doing anything, then you never shechted the animal. It's not an animal that then is edible because it's not kosher to eat. There was no shechita. So why not argue about that point, which would be a much more fundamental issue, is whether you can eat it or not, rather than simply about tumat tara. Ella, Rava says, the kuli alma metu. Everybody agrees that an animal born in the 8th month is classified as halachically dead. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Sabre, Kitrei Fa. They say that that classification doesn't necessarily render it a nevela when it dies then, because the same din applies to a trefa. Trefa, lafa bagav de metahi, a trefa that is living, and a trefa is classified, and the Gemara has different definitions of it, but the most accepted definition is that an animal that will not survive over the next 12 months because of whatever the trefa that it has. So that trefa makes it or classifies it as if it's a dead animal already. Yet the animal's walking around, it's still alive right now. So despite the fact that it's classified as mate halachically, shechitata mitarata. If you do shechita to a trefa, the shechita is successfully takes it out of the realm of nevela, brings it into the world of trefa, so it doesn't have tumah, it's not kosher l'achila because it's a trefa, but nevertheless it still removes the din of tumah from it. So achanami lo shna, so too over here. Even though the animal is classified as dead, nevertheless, shechting it is still efficacious in removing the tumah from the animal. The Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan mean the Tanakama of the Braita, lo dami lu treifa, it's not similar to a treifa. Treifa ita la shata kosher, hai lo ita la shata kosher. A treifa is different. A treifa at one point was a viable entity, was a good animal, and then it deteriorated or something happened that made it into a treifa. On the other hand, this animal is born, quote-unquote, dead. It's born, halakhically, not classified as being alive. So in the outset, it has this problem associated with it, and therefore, when you shecht it, it doesn't do anything to help you out. It remains in the vela. On the other hand, a treifa, which had a shata kosher, which means that it's b'chezka tara, then when you shecht it, that does have the ability to remove the tumat nevela from it, even though it will not be edible, and even though it's classified as dead. The chitema, wait a minute, not all treifot are treifot that developed after time. There's treifa mibet, and they're congenital treifot. That means that it never had a shata kosher. It never was a entity that was kasher, or had a status or a default that it was something that was considered kasher or alive. So then, if you have a congenital problem, then that was no different than an animal that's born in the eighth month. Ma'ikul ha'meimar, what are you going to say in that case? Hatam yesh b'mina shchita, hacha em b'mina shchita. Nevertheless, in the category of treifot, there are treifot that have a shata kosher that have shchita that is impactful on them and that it successfully removes the nevela. Whereas when it comes to eight-month gestation, any baby born in that eight-month gestation, none of them are viable entities. They're always problematic. If they're always problematic, then shechting them is not going to help you in that situation. So since there are situations where you could shecht the animal before it became a treifa and it would be kosher, and shchita is efficacious, then even after it becomes a treifa, it's still efficacious. And in animals that have congenital treifot, still they will lean on the other treifot, where within their category, there are animals that can have shchita prior to treifa, and therefore shchita is successful or efficacious in those situations. Whereas by the case of the 8-month entity, it's never viable, and since it's never viable, we don't in that situation say that the shchita is successful at removing the tumah or taking it out of the classification of nevela. Now, once you do that, then their machloket is not a machloket tanaim with regards to Rav Adar Bar Ava's position, because it seems everyone agrees now to Rav Adar Bar Ava's position that the 8-month baby is classified luckily as dead, so it's totally supportive of Rav Adar Bar Ava. Or if you want to say like the Rashba that it's a machloket tanaim with regards to the position of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, over here everybody agrees that it's not a viable entity. And therefore, they're all agreeing with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that there is some sort of threshold that you need to cross. Ibailu, mi plige rabbanan alei de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel alone. So here now the Gemara openly is asked the question, which is, do the rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? Beim timsam lomar plige, and if they do disagree with him, halacha kimoto, or ain't halacha kimoto? Is halacha like him, or is halacha like the chachamim who disagree with him? Tashma, egel shenolad biyom tov. A calf that is born on Yom Tov, shochatim oto b'Yom Tov, you gotta shecht it on that Yom Tov itself. Well, obviously that's less than 8 days, so you can shecht it. If that's the case, then there's clearly somebody or a Tana that disagrees with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and says you can shecht the animal even prior to elapsement of the 8 days. Now, in terms of muksa, as Rashi says over here, that it's not muksa because it's muchan al gabi imo. The mother was re'uya to be eaten on Yom Tov, and therefore the mother wasn't muksa coming into Yom Tov because shchita is muterd on Yom Tov. It's part of ochel nefesh. And since the mother was within the realm of possibility of utilization on Yom Tov and it doesn't have a din of muksa, the ubar, the fetus that's being carried along with the mother, gets a din of muchan along with the mother. And therefore when it's born on Yom Tov itself, it's not classified as nolad, it's classified as muchan agave imo. And since it's muchan agave imo, the muksa problem's gone, and you can shecht it on Yom Tov, seemingly because there's no such threshold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says. How come my skin on the Gemara says, no, this bright is being a unique situation, the kim lebe gave shekalu lo chadushav. It's a situation where we know for certain that it reached full term, it reached full gestation. So since we know that that's the case, then you can shecht it, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's situation is only when either we know for sure was born in the eighth month, or we have a safek as to whether it reached full gestation or not. That's when Rabbi Shimon Gamliel puts these tests to determine whether it's a viable entity. But if we know for sure it went to full gestation, then we know it's a viable entity, and we don't need to invoke these tests, even according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Therefore, this braita is not a problem for Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Tashma, v'shavim, shim nolad hu, v'mumo imo. That if an animal, which is a bechor, is born with its mum already in it, it's a congenital mum, that that's considered to be mina muchan, that's considered to be something that you can utilize on Yom Tov, you can shecht on Yom Tov. So the machloket is actually between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with regards to whether you're allowed to show a mum on a bechor to a expert, to a chacham on Yom Tov. The problem is that the psak of the chacham will actually determine the status of the animal. And just like when an individual goes to the mikveh and they switch from being tamei to being tahor, we classify that as being tikkun gavra, and that's a problem of mitakein on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, and we don't allow you to do that. Similarly, over here, the classification of the Bechor having a momenet changes it from something that's asur, a kodesh, that will go on the Mizbeah, to something that's mutar to eat because now it is chulin b'yad kohen because of the mum that the animal has in it. So the machloket between Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is as to whether that is considered to be a problem. On Yom Tov of Mitakein, Rabbi Yehuda says it's not a problem of Mitakein and you can't see the mumim. Rabbi Shimon says that it's a problem of Mitakein and you can't see it on Yom Tov. So now Vishavin, they both agree that if the animal is born with the mum in it, means that it never had a shata isur. The problem of tikkun only happens if the animal was asur, and now you made it mutar. But if it's born with its mum in it, then that mum itself makes it het there because it was congenital from the moment that it was born. It never was in a position of isur. That they agree that's mina mukhan, and therefore you could utilize it on Yom Tov itself. But once again here, you have an animal on the day of its birth that's a, which is available to be utilized, and is not a problem of muksa, which shows that you don't have to wait this requisite time of 8 days to ensure that the animal is actually a viable entity. In addition, Rashi just notes over here the additional requirement that the animal be born with the chachamim sitting right there. Because if the animal's born, and then only afterwards you take to the chachamim, there was a point in time when it was usur, even as a congenital mum, because it doesn't get a heter until the chachamim paskin on it. So this is a situation in which the chachamim have been, or the beit din have to be sitting right there as the animal is born. Therefore, they declared the mum as a mum immediately upon the birth before there was any chance for it to become a sur. And that's why everybody agrees, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, that there's no problem of tikkun of the animal, a tikkun bechor, in this situation. So this again shows or indicates that there's somebody who argues on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Gemara answers the same way it did before. Achanami shekalu lo chadashav. It's a situation where we know for sure it reached full gestation. Since we know that, then you don't need this test. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's test, again, is only when you haven't reached full gestation. Tashma. Damar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel halacha to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So this answers both questions. Number one, that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And number two is halacha michlal de bligei shmamina. If you have to pass an halacha like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that implies that someone disagrees with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And if that's the case, we know both now that there's someone who argues on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Rabbanan argue on him. And number two is that the halacha, according to Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. And that we are choshesh for that din of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Amar Abaye, nafal min agag. If the baby falls off the roof, or a lion came and snatched it away and killed it, everybody agrees that it is considered to be a living entity. I mean, this is a baby that was born, and it was a healthy baby, there was nothing wrong with it, but it lost its life in a sudden accident or incident that cut off its life, but not because there was some sort of deterioration in the baby, or not because it wasn't a viable entity. So in that case, everybody agrees, that means both Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim agree, that that was a viable entity. Ki plige, where do they argue? Shepihek v'meit. In a case where either the word pihek has different meanings by Rishonim in Brachot, in the Gemara Nidah, where you're going to establish a veset based on something physiological that happens in the woman along with the sighting of Dam. So over there it also uses the term pihek. And the definition there, as well as in the Gemara in Brachot, has nafkamina the halachot with regards to davening Shmon Esrei, with regards to Vestot, as well as with regards to what we're speaking about over here. It either means to yawn, to hiccup, or to burp. So we'll use the word yawn to explain it here. Shepihek v'meit, the baby yawned and died. Or they let out a sigh and died. Mar Savar Chayu, one of them says that it was a living entity, and it was a viable entity. And just because it yawned and died doesn't mean that it was too weak or wasn't a viable entity. Mar Savar Meitu. And the other opinion, meaning Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, believes that it is a non-viable entity. B'mai nafkamino. What does it matter whether it's a viable entity or not? Liftor mina yibum. As to whether it exempts the woman from having to perform yibum or chalitza in this case. In a situation in which a person passes away, and when he passes away, his wife is pregnant. Now, yibum only applies to the woman if there are no offspring. Here, the woman is pregnant, and if she has offspring, that will disqualify her or exempt her from the need to perform yibum to marry the brother of her deceased husband. So now we have to wait. We don't know whether the baby she's carrying is a viable entity or not. If the baby she gives birth to is a viable entity, then that exempts her, removes the requirement of yibum chalitza, and then she's free to marry anyone else. On the other hand, if the baby is never a viable entity, then there is no offspring from this couple, and therefore the deceased's brother now would perform Yibum or Chalitza with this woman. So knowing whether it's a viable entity or not makes a difference over here. So the nafkamina from this statement or this machloket is to whether she's Petura Amina Yibum. Had the baby been born while the husband was still alive and then passed away, then there would be nothing to speak about because when the husband passed away, they had no children or they had no descendants. Here, since the father already passed away, now it matters whether there's a descendant or not. As long as there's some descendant at that moment when the father's passed away, and that's determined only after the woman gives birth, that then exempts them from Yibum. Once they're exempt from Yibum, you can't reinstate Yibum afterwards. So whether it's a viable entity or not, that's the nafkamina over here, liftor mina Yibum. So now the Gemara says, how can you say that it falls off the roof or it's eaten by a lion? Everybody agrees that that's a viable entity. So Rav Papa and Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua traveled to the house of the son of Rav Yidi Bavin, that they made for him, and igla tilta was a delicacy. It is defined by Rashi in different ways throughout Shas. A lot of times Rashi says it's the third calf that is born to the mother. Other times Rashi says that it's a calf that's reached a third of its maturity. And that is a delicacy that they prepare for these special guests. But they did it on the seventh day after the calf was born. So that's before they reaching that eighth day threshold. V'amri lei and Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Yeshua and Rav Papa say to the son of Rav Yidi Bavin, Eat rechitu lei ad be'orta. Had you just waited until nightfall, havachlina minei, we would have eaten from it. Hashta lo achlina minei, but now we will not eat from it. So what you see from here is this is the equivalent of a lion eating the baby, or an accident happening that terminates the life unexpectedly. Shechita, shechting the animal, is a artificial termination of the life, and yet still they say you needed to wait until the eighth day. So you see that they believe that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's requirement for reaching the eighth day is even in a case where there's an accident or some sort of outside exogenous variable that terminates the life of the animal, even though the animal looked viable and was totally healthy, they still invoke this principle of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and say that we were not willing to eat from this animal because you shechted it on the seventh day. Had you just waited until nightfall, then we would have eaten from it. Rashi over here points out that that is because there's a stira in the pasuk. Pasuk says, "Vayash shivat yamim tachat imo." For 7 days, it will be under the auspices of its mother. And then, v'halayla, after that, it sounds like it's totally fine. I mean, on the night of the eighth day, it should be fine. On the other hand, the pasuk that we quoted before there is, "Umeyom hashmin v'hala yiratzeh." That only from the eighth day and onwards will it be qualified. So which is it? Is it only from the eighth day and onward that it's qualified? Or is it even from the night after the seventh day? I mean, the night of the eighth day, is that also qualified? Rashi says that since it's miksat ayom kikulo, that miksat ayom kikulo makes it that once you enter the eighth day, it's already qualified as if the whole eighth day has elapsed. That's interesting only because Rashi and Tosafot argue in other places in Shas as to whether miksat ayom kikulo can apply at nightfall, which is discussed in the Tosvot, Tibir Matkil Afilu, in Moed Koton, Chof Aleph Amud Bet, Rosh, there in the Perek Gimel of Moed Koton, Ot Lamed, and Ot Lamed Gimel also discusses it. And Tosvot in Megillah, on Daf Chof Amud Bet, brings this issue with regards to Rashi, saying Miksat Yom Kukulo as application by Sfira Torim in Megmar in Psachim Pe Aleph Amud Aleph, where it seems that Rashi thinks that there is Miksat Yom Kukulo at night, and Tosafot seems to disagree with that. Tosafot believes it will only apply in the morning. It cannot apply at night. And here it seems to be Rashi, following his own Shita, says that Miksat Yom Kukulo has application even by night in this situation. Then Rashi brings the solution of the Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Yud Bet, where he says that Laila Likdusha Yom Naratza. The difference in the diok out of the psukim as to whether it's after the seventh day it's okay, only on the eighth day it's okay, has to do a difference between whether you're makdishit. You can be makdishit even on the night of the eighth, because that's after 7 days. There you have permission to be makdishit. On the other hand, in order to bring it as a korban, korbanot are only brought in the mikdash during the daytime. So therefore it would only be qualified on the eighth day itself. And that's the distinction between the night after the seventh and the eighth day. One is ro'oi le hakdisha to animal. The other one is ro'oi for korban. But when it comes to chulin, there's no such distinction. And therefore, the animal will be qualified at nightfall. And that's what they were saying to him. Had you just waited until nightfall, the animal would have been qualified and we would have eaten from it. But now that you did on the seventh day, we won't eat from it. That implies again that they believe that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion applies even when life is suddenly terminated. So now Gemara has to amend that statement of Abaye as to where there is a machloka between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, Ela kishapihek v'meit, in a case where it yawns and dies, diriya kol meitu. Everybody agrees that's a sign that this entity was not viable. It was weak, and just a simple yawn had it pass away. Now, whether that means literally it's a yawn and passed away, or it means that it was sick and it passed away, or didn't show signs of viability and passed away before it showed any full life force, most of the Rishonim believe like that. The Baal HaMor takes it very literally. That is, that he yawned and passed away. So then, ki plige, where do Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim disagree as to whether you have to wait or not? Nafa min hagag v'chalo ari, in a case where it falls off the roof, or it's eaten by an ari, where the life was suddenly terminated. Mar savar meitu, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, well, it didn't make it to the 8th day, so we just don't know. Or, we didn't make it to the 30th day, so we just don't know. Or by animals, it didn't make it to the 8th day, we just don't know. And therefore, you can't eat it. Misafek, because we just don't know if it's a viable entity. Umar Sabar Chayu, on the other hand, the Chachamim believe that the default status is Chay, that it's considered to be a viable entity. You only have to wait when there's a problem or there's some sort of weakness that's involved. In those situations, we wait because we want to ensure that it is a viable entity. But if you know for sure that it looked like a viable entity, the default status is going to be that it is a viable entity. And so that's the machloket between them, is in a case where the life was suddenly terminated and it didn't show signs of non-viability. Bray the Rav Dimi Bar Yosef, the son of Rav Dimi Bar Yosef, he had a baby that was born, and unfortunately it passed away within the first 30 days. Yotiv kamit abel ilavei. He was sitting shiva, he was be'aveilut over the loss of the child. Amalei avua, Savoronita kabait the mechal? You want to eat all the goodies? Or the way that the Tosafot has the gear says, Todunita. Rashi says it's matamim, it's goodies, desserts, good stuff. Or Tosafot says it's lashon seidal mizonot, meaning that the avel, the people provide the meals, the sudat havara, people bring over food to the avel. So are you sitting avelut so that you can benefit from other people's food? The implications of which were that he shouldn't be an avel right now. The baby died within 30 days. Since it died within 30 days, it did not cross the threshold of being a viable entity. And if you paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, you don't sit shiva for it, you don't have avelut, because the child did not reach the point or threshold of knowing that it was a viable entity. It's a safek. The safek b'avelut, we go to kula, and a kula b'avelut means that there is no avelut. Amarle, he answers his father, Kim Le Bei Shekalu Lo Chadoshav. I'm absolutely certain that it reached full term or full gestation. I know that. Rashi before, in defining what it means, Shekalu Lo Chadoshav, with regards to a baby that you know for certain it reached full gestation, in the case, for instance, like Rabbi Eliezer, by Mechshire Mila to be Docha Shabbat, you'd have to know for sure that it reached full gestation. So Rashi explains there that it's a case that the baby is born 9 months after they had marital relations. From the time that they had marital relations, the time the baby's born, there was a duration of 9 months. Velo shimsha kol yemei ibura. And Rashi makes another comment, which is Rashi the Shitato, that there was no biyah the entire time of their pregnancy. Now the truth is that obviously there can't be biyah again within that period of time that she is tohura, because then there's a possibility that she became pregnant, not just right after she went to the mikveh, but in the week or two after that she goes to the mikvah. If you're talking about Doraita, if you're talking about Midrabanan, it would have to be within that week. So if you have multiple biot, then you're not certain as to whether it's 9 months or not 9 months, because you don't know which biah created the pregnancy. On the other hand, if there's only one biah, you're certain then that there's no problem. Now, once the woman is already pregnant, then it shouldn't matter anymore. But Rashi, the Shitato, we've seen before, the Rabbeinu Tam argues on Rashi, like in the Gemara, in Yevamot, Taf Yud Bet Amud Bet, and the Gemara Nidah, Chaf Hei Amud Bet, Rashi seems to indicate that a woman who is already pregnant can become pregnant again, and therefore the new pregnancy can cause a problem for the entity that's already there. The Rabbeinu Tam says that you can't have a conception once the woman is already pregnant. So Rashi, the Shitato, says that he didn't have biyah with her the entire duration of the pregnancy. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam would say at a certain point, you know for sure that it's not a problem anymore because the woman's already pregnant. She can't have a conception at this point in time. And therefore, you don't have to worry about this biyah being the source of the baby that is now being born, and you know for sure that it reached full gestation. So that's what he said over here, that I know for sure that Kalulo Chadashav. Rav Ashi Ikla Lebei Rav Kano. Rav Ashi went to visit Rav Kano. Itrabei Milta Got Latin Yomin. He had some bad news. Bad news means Avelut, that he was now Avelut, and it was within 30 days. Chazio de Gyoti Vikamit Abeli Lavei. He saw that even though the baby had passed away within 30 days of its birth, that Rav Kano was sitting, Shiva was in Avel for it. Amalei lo savalei mar lahad amar Rav Yehuda Meshmol Ocha Rav Shimon Gamliel. Don't you subscribe to that which Rav Yehuda says in name Shmuel, that the Loch is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Which means that if you don't cross over the 30-day threshold, we don't know it's a viable entity. Safek. Safek Babelut is the Kula, and there should be no Avelut over here. Why are you sitting Avelut? Amalei kimle begavei shikalulu chadashav. Once again here, he says, I'm certain that it reached full gestation, and therefore I'm mitabel on it because I know it was a chai. It was definitely a live entity, and therefore it is appropriate for me to sit Shiva or have Avelut over the baby because it's not a safek in this case. And in Shulchan Aruch Shin Ayin Dalet Sifchet, where he brings down the halacha that tino ko shloshim yom, yom shloshim bichlal, a baby that's 30 days and the 30th day included, emit ablim alav, there is no Avelut for him, even though he looks like he's a full healthy baby. After that, we do have Avelut for him. Elaim Kain, we know that he reached full term in gestation, or by then, even if on the first day he passes away, you would have Avelut for him, like it says in our Gemara over here. So many of the things like burial, which the Shulchan Aruch says, Peredeya Siman Shin Nun Gimel, don't have to be done for a Nefel or a child that's very young. But over there, most of the Mefarshei Shulchan Aruch note that all of these statements about a child that's under 30 days say that you don't have to do these things. You don't have to carry them out in a regular mitah, like a regular burial. You don't have to do all of the trappings of regular burial and avelut for them, but seemingly you can opt in to do it, and it probably relates to the difference in infant mortality. For the Ramban in Torat Adam notes that because so many youngsters passing away, that you can't have avelut all the time for these youngsters passing away when you have infant mortality at rates of close to 50% and maybe even higher. Today, where it's much more rare that something like that happens, then the general practice is to treat the burial like a regular burial. You can opt in because it is less common for us. On the other hand, when it comes to Avelut, that only from the 31st day and onward would it be considered a Bar Kayama, like we say in our Gemara here, where there'd be full-fledged Avelut. Elim Kain, we know Kalu Chadashav, he reached full gestation, and then there would be Avelut even from day one. And if the baby goes into an incubator, then once the baby emerges from the incubator, that's considered by the day of Leida for the baby. And if the baby survives 30 days after leaving the incubator, then you have the same din as surviving 30 days after the leida. So now the Gemara continues. Itmar, mate bitoch shloshim yom. If the baby dies within the first 30 days of its life, bam daminit katsha, and the woman had already gotten engaged, gotten married to another man, meaning that she had assumed that she was not chayevet in yibum or chalitza, because she was pregnant, and she assumed that the baby would be a viable entity, and therefore she was exempt, and she engaged with another man, meaning that she got married to someone else. Now all of a sudden she has the baby, and the baby dies within the 30 days. That's the girsa that we have over here. The Tosafot in Bechorot points out that Rashi's girsa over here says that he died b'sof shloshim yom. He died at the end of the 30 days. But either way, Amar Avivna Mishmei Derava, im ishet Yisrael hi, if she got married, the new husband that she got married to is Yisrael, choletzet, let her do chalitza. There's no downside for her doing chalitza over here. It will not make her a surah to her new husband, because a grusha and a chalitza are mutarim to Israel. So let her do chalitza, and then go ahead and the person that she had kiddushin with continue to consummate that marriage and continue that marriage. Then, imeshet koheini, if the new husband that she got married to is a kohen, ain't a choletzet, then we don't allow her to do chalitza. That is because a kohen is mutar ba'almana. A kohen is a surur begrusha, can't marry a divorcee. Midra banan, a kohen is restricted from a chalutza. So if we allow her to perform chalitza now, that will disqualify her from continuing in this marriage to the kohen that she now had entered into. So in order to avoid that problem, we don't make her do chalitza. Rav Shravya Mishmei Rava. So this is Ravina saying in the name of Rava what Rava said. Rav Shravya has a different mesora in the name of Rava. Amar achad zo v'achad zo choletzet. Both of them do chalitza. Whether it's an Eshet Yisrael or an Eshet Kohen, she has to do chalitza. So Amalei Ravina, the Rav Shravya, So Ravina, who had this different Mesorah from Rava, says Rav Shravya, Be'orta Amar Rava Achi. Rava said, like you said, at nighttime. You were in the Beit Midrash when Rava said it at nighttime. The Tzafra in the morning, Hoder Bey, he backed away from it and he said what I said. So Amar Lei, so Rav Shravya says back to him, Sheritua. Wow, he was matir it? Hey, Ravod, the Tishu Darba. He ratzon that he should be matir chelev. Now chelev is fats that are suim midoraita. And what he's pointing out to him is that he does not think that the Mesorah that Ravina is bringing in the name of Rava is correct. He's saying that's way too makil. Why is there any reason that you would not make a do chalitza? There is a requirement for chalitza over here. So I don't understand what you're saying in the name of Rava. I think the Mesorah and that which I heard is correct. And now if you want to be makil like that, that's way too makil. And if you're going to be makil like that, you can be makil and be matir chelev, which is asur midoraita. Or in essence, he does not accept the emendation of Rava's position that Ravina is presenting over here. Now the Bali HaTosvot point out, Hiksha Rav Moshe Mibayim, V'tachlo Tzumabekach, let the woman do chalitza, and let her continue her marriage to the Kohen. Because we have a principle in Yevamot, that a safek chalitza, a woman who has a safek as to whether she needs chalitza, or had chalitza, if she's already married to a Kohen, we don't disrupt, we do not undermine the marriage. And that's exactly the situation over here. We don't know if she needs chalitza or not. That depends on whether the baby was a viable entity. But we don't know because the baby died within 30 days. And so now you have a safek as to whether it was a viable entity or not. That means it's a safek whether she needs chalitza. The kiddushin was already done with the kohen. So once the kiddushin is done already, even if there is chalitza misafek, that does not undermine the marriage and we let the marriage continue. So he asks, I don't understand what the question is over here. Let them both do chalitza, both the woman who's married to Israel or the woman who's married to a Kohen, let them do chalitza misafek, and then they can continue their marriage. Why would you not require the woman who's married to the Kohen to do chalitza? Because as we see, we're not going to make them get divorced anyway. So he says, Va'omer Rebbe, my Rebbe answered, it's not because if they do chalitza, we would force a divorce over here. Okay, the Efshar below chalitza. Since we have the opportunity to do this without chalitza, mutav shlo tachlots. Better she doesn't do chalitza, shlo lotzi laz al bana, because then that will cast aspersions on her children. And he brings proof to this that in other situations, we don't allow a woman to do chalitza, because we say some people will be there for the chalitza, they won't be there for the announcement that the chalitza was improper or not necessary, and then they'll think that she married a kohen as a chalitza. And if that's the case, the children are going to be problematic, and that's going to cast aspersions on the children. So even though in that situation, we don't make her do chalitza for the fear that people might think negatively about her children, so too over here. We prefer she doesn't do chalitza with the kohen that she's already engaged to, not because they'd have to get divorced, but because in the future that might cause problems for her children. Even though we know it's a safek chalitza and she doesn't have to get divorced, nevertheless, it can create a public relations disaster for the family because the children will be classified by some people, considered by some people as to be children of a chalitza. And so that's why we're trying to avoid it, not because we would force them to get divorced in this case. Right now the Gemara continues with the last part of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yehuda Matir, the guards who are androgynous. We said in the Mishnah that it's not, the meal of an androgynous is not dochet HaShabbat, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it is dochet HaShabbat. So it seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that an androgynous, which is a person, a human being that is displaying, that has both male and female organs and is presenting themselves as both male and female, and we don't know whether they're male or female. At other places in the Gemara, it's discussed extensively as to what the exact status of an androgynous is, whether it's considered as a zachar, nekeva, or biriyah b'fnei atzma, its own entity. And that creates all sorts of problems because the safek is not simply a safek between zachar and nekeva. It's a possibility that it's a safek that it's not zachar and not a nekeva. So now Rabbi Yehuda from our Mishnah seems to be indicating that an androgynous is a zachar because he allows you to be mechalal Shabbat for an androgynous in order to give him a brit milah. The only way you would do that is if you know for sure this entity needs a brit milah, which means that you're classifying it as a male. So the chachamim will classify it as a safek, whether it's a safek nekeva zachar, nekeva does not require a milah, or whether it's a briya b'fnei atzma, it may not need a milah. So in any of those situations, it won't be docha Shabbat. But Rabbi Yehuda, it says that androgynous is docha Shabbat, then it makes it sound like it is a zachar. And on this we say, Amar Rav Shizvi, Amar Rav Chista, lo l'chol Amar Rav Yehuda, androgynous zachar hu. Not for everything or every classification does Rav Yehuda say that androgynous is classified as a male. Shimata Omer Kain, if that's true, Barachin Yarech. If that's true, then when it comes to Arachin, the parshia that's found at the end of Parshat Bechukutai, the end of Sefer Vayikra, where a person donates the value of an individual to the Mikdash. Now, they don't say the individual's value. They say the Erech. Erech has tables based on your age and your gender as how much you donate to the Mikdash. So if you say Erech of an individual to the Mikdash, and you go look up in the table, what's their age, what's their gender, and you give that amount to the Mikdash. Over there, we have a din in Arachin that it does not have application to an androgynous. How do you know that there's no Arachin for an androgynous? The Tanya, Hazachar, Velo Tumtum, Va'androgynous. As male, Gaz and Erech, but not a Tumtum, that's someone who does not display either signs of male or female sexual organs. It is what they call covered up, and we can sometimes know afterwards if we open up, we can find it, but sometimes we never know. So there is Safek Zachar, Safek Nekeva. Over there, Hazachar, as Rashi points out, the extra hey teaches you that not only does it have to be someone who is a Safeka male, but Hazachar must be an absolute male. But so they're precluded. Locho Yoe Be'erach Ish. Okay, so if they're not in the qualification or the category of males of the tables, let them at least be a nekeva. If you're not a male, then maybe you'll be a nekeva, and they should get the table of a nekeva, because mimonam shach, either a zachar nekeva, tamul omar, hazachar, ve'im nekevahi. Ve'im nekevahi, the extra ve'im, teaches you that it has to be an absolute nekeva. Zachar vadai, nekeva vadait. If you're absolute zachar, an absolute nekeva, then you do give arachin and you pay it. Below tumtum ve'androgynous. And not a tumtum and androgynous. There's some question as to whether tumtum should be in the girsa over here. And the Gemara in Bechorot takes tumtum out because tumtum is a safek zachar, safek nekeva. So at minimum, it should have to pay at least the arachin of a nekeva. Whereas androgynous, where there is this possibility that it's neither a zachar nor nekeva, is excluded. It's possible that you could leave tumtum in if you believe that it has to be identifiably a zachar and a nekeva. And therefore, if it's a tumtum and it's a safek, that already precludes it. But nevertheless, there is some question as to whether tumtum should be here. But as far as we're concerned, androgynous is not subject to arachin. That means that that androgynous is not classified as a zachar, not classified as a nekeva. Now, why does that have anything to do with Rabbi Yehuda? That's because v'stam sifra. Sifra, which is Torah Kohanim, the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra, Rabbi Yehuda, that the Stam Sifra, without any authorship, we assume is written by Rabbi Yehuda, Stam Rabbi Yehuda and Shas, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eli, and he is the author of the Torah Kohanim. So if he's the author of Torah Kohanim, and this Braita that we just brought is from the Torah Kohanim, and in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda speaks, you see there's a differentiation in his position. In our Mishnah, he calls the androgynous a Zachar. In the Braita, in Torah Kohanim, Rabbi Yehuda says that androgynous is a Safek Zachar, Safek Nekevar, Safek Birya, does not qualify for Arachin. It's not qualified as a Zachar over there. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Avin Amin Tanina. Those have another Braita where we see the same view within Rabbi Yehuda. Kol Ksherim L'Kadesh. Anybody can make the waters of the Parah Adumah, sprinkling the ashes into the water to make the waters of Mei Chatat for sprinkling on people who have Tumat Meit. Chutz, with the exception of Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan. They are not qualified because they're not Bnei Dat, and therefore they're not able to create the kedusha that we need. Rabbi Yehuda machshir b'katan uposel b'isha. The androgynous. Rabbi Yehuda says that a katan can do it, but a woman cannot do it, and an androgynous cannot do it. That's because the pasuk over there says v'natan in the male formulation. So v'natan is v'no isha, v'natan and not androgynous. Again, if you think that an androgynous in our mission is a zachar, and that's why he gets a milah, then also by the kiddush mechatat, the androgynous should be classified as a zachar and be able to do it. So once again here, you see Rabbi Yehuda does not believe in androgynous as a zechar shmamina. So you see, this statement of Rav Shizvi is correct. That Rabbi Yehuda believes by milah he's a zachar, or classified like a zachar. By all these other cases, he's not classified as a zachar. Now the question becomes, why by milah does he get a milah? Why is he classified as a zachar? So Gemara says, why is it different by milah that he's classified as a zachar? Because the pasuk says that you should give a brit milah to kol. The kol is a riboy. Kol zachar means the rabot androgynous. Not only does a zachar get a milah, but even kol zachar. Anybody that's in that category of zachar, including an androgynous who has that safek or has that possibility of classification of a zachar, he is included and therefore he gets a brit milah that is docha shabbat, just like a regular zachar. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda's position is not based on the fact that an androgynous is a zachar. It's based on the fact that there's a special riboy by milah that includes him, whereas by every other case, since there isn't such a riboy, we would not include him. Tosafot points out that it's very strange, because it's only because by milah that we have a riboy that we include the androgynous. Yet by Arachin, you just told me you need a specific pasuk to exclude the androgynous. You need the hay from Hazachar and the ve'im from the nekeva to say the androgynous is excluded. Why did you do that? If you don't have a riboy, then androgynous should automatically be precluded from the Arachin. So why do you need a riboy? So Tosafot about it first suggests, okay, maybe that's what the Gemara is saying over here. We just learned it out from the word Zachar and Nekeva. It's not because of the riboy of Hazachar and Ve'im Nekeva. The problem is that the Gemara in Arachin says that it is from the extra letters. So what Tosafot says over here is Enochanami. You have now competing psukim over here. You have a pasuk by Arachin that says that the default status of androgynous is that it would be classified as Zachar and Nekeva, and you need a preclusion from the pasuk to knock him out to say that he's not included. By Milah, you have a pasuk that teaches the opposite. The default status of androgynous is that it's not considered or classified as a zachar, and therefore you need a riboy. So now you have two different paradigms that are set up. The paradigm of Arachin that says that he's not a zachar. And then you have the paradigm of Milah, which says he's zachar. So now when you come to other areas in halacha, you have to figure out which paradigm is governing. And what Tosafot suggests is that we go to Chumrah. We always go to Chumrah and assume whichever which side would be the Chumrah, that's what we classify as the paradigm. So in most situations, the Chumrah would be to classify him as the paradigm of Arachin that says that he's not a Zachar. And if the case would turn out to be the Kula, we wouldn't learn from Arachin. Like, for instance, Biat Mikdash, where disqualifying him from being included in the Din would say that you're not Chayav Karet for coming with Tumah to the Mikdash. Therefore, we would use Milah, where it says that he is a Zachar, to say that he should be Chayav in that case. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on top of Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph.